again to badquaker.com. Today is Wednesday, August 31st. This is episode 20 of badquaker.com podcast. I'm Ben.
And I'm Kai.
You want to just jump right into it with Anonymous?
I guess so.
Okay, well, we might as well just jump right in with Anonymous.
Well, actually, before we start with that, we wanted to talk about this coming week.
Oh, that's right. Yes, Thursday and or Friday, we may not have a Bad Quaker article and or, I like to use and or as many times in the same sentence as possible, and or possible. Thursday and Friday of this week, that would be the 1st and 2nd mm-hmm. of September, there may or may not be a Bad Quaker article and or audio file. We are having a major moving within the family, and so we're shifting to multiple locations for the Bad Quaker compound, which means, you know, moving all the bullion and all the pounds and pounds and pounds of stored grains and zombie masks and, you know, zombie gas masks to keep the zombie infection from getting us.
Or, you know, mattresses and used furniture.
Couches and boring things like that. Anyway, so there may or may not be an article for this Thursday and Friday. If we let you down there, sorry about that. Also, we could mention the fact that last week our internet service, I mean, not internet service provider, our internet hosting company let us down for about 14 to 16 hours within a 24-hour period. And so if you tried to get to badquaker.com during that time and you got a message that we didn't exist, it's because we didn't exist.
Yeah.
But we're back. I think that was like Thursday evening through midday Friday or something like that. So that happened. Any other updates or news? Or?
I don't think so.
Okay. Well, I'll go ahead and play this little segment. This is from Anonymous, the hacker group, or at least it's alleged to be from Anonymous.
Because that's the thing with Anonymous is you don't really ever know what it's from Anonymous and what isn't from Anonymous. Then again, I guess with the matrix structure of Anonymous, if you claim to be Anonymous, you are Anonymous.
And you're not at the same time.
Yeah.
After all, how can you be Anonymous if you claim to be part of Anonymous?
It's very confusing.
Hopefully the volume will be
okay. Fellow citizens of the internet, we are Anonymous. On September 17th, Anonymous will flood into Lower Manhattan, set up tents, kitchens, peaceful barricades and occupy Wall Street for a few months. Once there, we shall incessantly repeat one simple demand in a plurality of voices. We want freedom. This is a non-violent protest. We do not encourage violence in any way. The abuse and corruption of corporations, banks and governments ends here. Join us. We are Anonymous. We are Legion. We do not forgive. We do not forget. Wall Street, expect us.
Now, that's a little confusing to me.
So terribly confusing.
The voice says that they're going to, on the days that they say, they're going to swarm Wall Street. And the article that goes with it says that simultaneous occupations of financial districts are being planned in New York City, Madrid, Milan, London, Paris, and San Francisco. Sorry, Chicago, you're just not important. and Hong Kong too. They left out Hong Kong and Tokyo.
Wow.
Must not be any hackers in Chicago, Hong Kong, and Tokyo, huh?
Either that, or you know, Tokyo police would just
beat them senseless.
Yeah, there's not a whole lot of crime in Tokyo.
Same way with Chicago police, but yeah. You know, there's a lot of crime in Chicago, but the police will still beat you senseless.
There's not a lot of crime in Tokyo because the punishments for crime are incredibly severe.
This is totally off the subject, but I was reading about the way that they conduct the death penalty in Japan. I guess they don't have a lot of death penalty sentences, but when you're sentenced for death penalty, you're shoved away incommunicado. You don't talk to your lawyer. You don't talk. They appeal your case over and over until they come to the conclusion of whether or not they're going to kill you. Mm-hmm. And they don't tell you. They never tell you if your case is doing good or doing bad. You just sit there and go day after day. And they never tell you when you're scheduled to die. And then, you know, one day they knock on the door and they hand you your food. And the next day they knock on the door and they hand you your food. And the next day they knock on the door and they say, come with us, and they kill you. Just like that. That would be terrifying.
That's, I think, almost as bad as what they were doing in communist Russia, where they would line you up in the firing squad, mm-hmm. and then they would, like, fire, get to you and be like, ah, you're good. We're going to let you go.
Today is your lucky day, comrade.
They did this to Dostoevsky, like, I don't know, 4 or 5 times.
Really?
Yeah. It's kind of why when you read Dostoevsky, the first stuff is, you know, mm-hmm. legible. And then as time goes on, he gets really insane.
That would have a tendency to twist the mind a bit. A little bit of, what's it called, post-traumatic stress yeah. syndrome.
And then suddenly he stopped writing bad things about the communist party.
He suddenly became a convert, huh?
Yes.
Back to the anonymous thing, they basically stated was that they were, the whatever date that the voice said, I can't even remember the date, September 17th, it's on the article here. September 17th, they're going to swarm these financial districts. They're going to set up tents, kitchens, and what was it, non-violent, peaceful blockades.
Yeah.
Now, how long can you blockade on Wall Street in New York City and it be peaceful?
Yeah.
You know, long enough to actually stand, is about the time your feet stop moving is when a New York cop is going to take you down.
Yeah.
But above and beyond all that, you know, if I were a boxer, I'm just thinking, you know, if I were a boxer and I had someone who really upset me, I would not go after them in a chess match.
Right.
And if I were a chess champion, and I really, really wanted to, you know, to dominate someone and show them how great that I was compared to them, I probably wouldn't go and find Mike Tyson and take a swing at him.
Right.
And it seems to me like for Anonymous to show up, you know, in person.
Which kind of defeats the point of being anonymous. I mean,
With unlicensed, because I'm sure they're not going to go and, you know, ask for permits for all this. So if you're going to show up with unlicensed food kitchens and tents and blockades on a New York City street, I can't imagine that, because he said months, or she said months, or I don't know if there's an actual gender to the electronic voice, but the voice said months. I'm thinking seconds.
Yeah.
You know, I don't mean to be mocking Anonymous. I prefer not to have our website hacked.
This is not going to end well.
I don't see how it could.
And here's the thing, like, okay, so Anonymous is really determined to do this in a peaceful way, and, you know, all of the Anonymous members stay peaceful, and New York especially, but pretty much all cities around the world, have a distinguished record of planting people in protests to cause violence.
We know they do it in New York. They did it in New York on the same street where the march came mm-hmm. for the 420 protests, mm-hmm. and they packed it full of undercover cops.
Yeah, and the thing with Anonymous is you're anonymous. So how do you know who's the
exactly.
cop and who's well, the anonymous?
They, to be honest, they stand out. Well, you can tell. I mean,
yeah. Besides, isn't Anonymous like, I don't know, maybe I shouldn't. Isn't Anonymous mostly like 14-year-old kids?
I don't think so. I'm thinking
And
they might utilize those to get their servers up and everything.
Yeah, well, that's the other thing is the reason Anonymous is so fierce is because they use denial of service attacks.
Yeah.
And the only way you can do that is creating zombie computers.
Right.
So that's where their power comes from.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not that there are vast legions of Anonymous members. It's that they have access to vast legions of computer zombies.
And I should point this out, because this is my problem.
Maybe Anonymous has zombies.
They're going to flood the streets of New York City with zombies.
Awesome. I'm in. Sign me up for that.
Makeup and everything. But this is my problem with Anonymous. There's a lot of what they stand for that I'm very encouraged by.
Mm-hmm.
But utilizing the zero aggression principle, and you know, I try as much as possible to you know, live my life within the zero aggression principle. As long as nobody pisses me off, we might lose our G rating for that. Anyway, no, seriously, I try to live my life with the zero aggression principle. Now, using the zero aggression principle as your foundation, Anonymous violates the zero aggression principle if they go to somebody's computer and they violate that person's property rights by infecting that computer with a virus that allows them to take control of it and use it as a zombie computer.
Right.
Now, technically, there's some gray area. It's not really gray area, but it's according to where, it's according to how picky you want to get with true libertarian property rights. In all honesty, I don't believe governments have the right to own property.
Right.
I believe that's a violation of property rights. I don't believe the
because
state...
they're not people.
They're not people. Only people have the right to own property, and governments are not people. Therefore, a government computer belongs to no one.
Right.
Now, here's the next argument. A corporation is not a person.
Right.
A corporation doesn't even have an owner. It has this ambiguous blob that owns it.
Which, we're not talking about businesses.
No. No, not businesses. Corporations.
Yeah.
A business has an owner,
right?
But when you have a
Bob's Jelly Donuts on the street corner has
Bob
as the owner,
exactly,
and
he's responsible.
He
owns
that
the company,
business, and
right.
He owns that property. But when you have somebody like J.P. Morgan,
yeah, or General Electric, or
right.
Shell Oil, or BP, or
they,
somebody like this,
they may have a CEO, but they don't have an owner,
right? And the CEO doesn't actually have ownership in the business. He
right.
may own some stock. But just owning some stock, you can own. I own stock in companies I don't even know what they are.
Right.
You know? So owning stock in a company is not true libertarian ownership
no.
in the Lockean sense.
Right.
So technically, any computer owned by a corporation is unowned and therefore
can
homesteadable.
Be homesteaded.
So I don't know, because I don't know anything about Anonymous in this sense. But if Anonymous is homesteading, at using libertarian speak,
mm-hmm.
you know, if an Anonymous is homesteading unowned computer property in the sense of hard drives that belong that are in the possession of corporations and governments and so forth, then from a technical libertarian sense, I don't have a problem with Anonymous, in as long as when they do one of their denial of service attacks, again, they're not harming an individual.
Right.
If you're, let's say, badquaker.com.
Right.
Let's say if Anonymous used a wave of zombie computers to do a denial of service attack on badquaker.com, they would specifically be aggressing on the owner
right.
of badquaker.com.
Right.
And therefore, they would be violating the zero aggression principle through their aggressive act, even
right.
if they don't like what we do at badquaker.com.
Right.
Yeah, there are people walking around me every day that are doing things I don't like. That doesn't give me the right to attack them.
Right.
On the other hand, if you have someone who is an aggressor, let's pick a real bad guy like the Egyptian government during that revolution, when the Egyptian government was
mm-hmm.
actively attacking people. If Anonymous, this is all on a theoretical level for all you Homeland Security drones that are listening to this. If Anonymous were to use corporate and government computers as zombies to attack government computers of the Egyptian government, then on a purely libertarian natural rights level, mm-hmm. I would have no problem with that.
Right.
All of that is legitimate. I would say, I don't know the wisdom of that.
Right.
Because it's our policy, as we've discussed many times, that if you attack this beast, you're playing into its hands. You're actually making it stronger. You're helping it.
Although, there is something to be said, because the specific way that they do attacks, the dedicated denial of service attacks, is not so much attacking the government. Like, if you were to attack the government using it,
mm-hmm.
it wouldn't so much be an attack that is kind of an aggressive attack. It's more stripping away their ability to do a certain thing. So it's a very gray area.
It's kind of like standing in front of a cop or standing in front of a soldier. Or
right.
You're not necessarily punching him in the nose or something. You're not shooting someone.
Or it would be like, getting a group of 1,000 people to go stand in the courthouse.
Yeah. That would be kind of like a denial of service attack. I think they've made that argument before. I think they've made the argument that it's like a sit-in where everyone just goes and sits in a spot and then forces the police to move them or whatever. The difference with that, again, though, is if you're on private property, let's say, that's not a good example. Okay, well, then I won't go back into that again. But if you're dealing with a governmental agency or a corporate agency, then again, they don't have property rights.
Right.
So if you're on their quote-unquote property doing a sit-in or staging some kind of a lock-in of some kind like that, then from a libertarian point of view, that's perfectly legitimate.
Right.
You couldn't do that because you think Starbucks is, like, you know, harming the ozone or something. Because in that made-up case, not that I know that Starbucks is...
Right.
But I'm just using a made-up case. In a situation like that, you don't have a physical victim, and you don't have a physical act of aggression against a person.
Right.
And you have private property. Well, no, Starbucks is a corporation.
Oh,
I wonder, though, if individual units are privately owned. But even those are probably corporations.
Right. Well, it would depend. I think you would have to be very careful
mm-hmm.
in situations like that.
Whether
it's a franchise business or...
Or whether it's a corporation.
Yeah.
And a corporation can franchise from a corporation,
right.
So it's hard to tell.
But it's kind of, like, with their attack on Wall Street, or their denial of service on Wall Street, because that's, in a sense, what they're trying to do in
right.
the physical realm,
right.
as opposed to...
Shutting down computers.
Right.
Right.
You know, the street itself is owned by the government.
Right.
So
it's fair game.
It's fair game. And the actual buildings where the corporations are housed are fair game.
Right.
But you have to make sure that you're not interfering with any... legitimately held private property.
Say the taxi driver that's trying to do his job.
Right.
Yeah. And again, back to the practical aspect of attacking this thing, though, when you decide you want to take on something like this, you need to really plot out how you're going to do it, and you need to realize what the strengths of your enemy are and what your strengths are, and always fight your battles based on your strengths and your enemy's weaknesses.
And quite frankly, Anonymous's strength is its ability to be anonymous on the internet. That's its strength.
Yeah.
And
in being anonymous.
Yeah. And it you lose that strength when you
mm-hmm.
step away from out in front of your computer and you go there. You're not anonymous if they can physically grab you and say, you're you.
And the other thing is what you pointed out earlier is how many, what's the French word that they use? provocures, is that it? Provocures? How many plants are they going to put there? They're going to say that are going to do something crazy like smash a window or something with a Guy Fawkes mask, and then they're going to say, see, that's what those people do. Mm-hmm. And maybe Anonymous is totally peaceful, but there's a guy with a Guy Fawkes mask smashing a window, and it's just like when they blame anarchists for all this kind of garbage, and there's no anarchist there. It's you know, they're not at all anarchists. Right. They're provocateurs. If I'm pronouncing the French word right.
Yeah. I had something there and then I lost it.
On Facebook, I have a liberal friend on Facebook that's a really nice lady, and we talk sometimes on there. And she put a post that Michelle Bachmann is releasing her memoirs this November. Michelle Bachmann is a presidential candidate.
And she's supposed to wait until after you've won or lost the presidential campaign to release your
memoirs? Obama put his big book out like the year before, or right about the time that he announced his run for the presidency. So you get some free publicity because bookstores have their face on there and stuff. Mm-hmm. So Michelle Bachmann is putting out her memoirs this November, and so my friend on Facebook says, let's help her have a name with some suggestions for a name for her memoirs. So I'm going to read some of these. The first one is, you thought Sarah Palin was an idiot. Now, of course, these are coming from mostly liberals, so just keep that in mind as you hear this. The next one is, I hear voices, and they don't like you. The next one, the crazies, not just for the magazine covers. I'll skip ahead for a couple, and we have, the power of the potato compels you. And then another one. Maybe I better not read that one. Yeah, I think I'll not read that one. I have to read this one. Okay, so this is Michelle Bachmann's memoirs, and it's called Bachmann's Stupid Overdrive. And then the king of them all, the one that I really like. I like turtles. Now, you only get that if you've ever seen the little kid dressed up as a zombie in the video messing with the adult reporter who's trying to get the stupid little,
sound bite.
Yeah, he's trying to get the sound bite, and the kid just totally ignores the lady's comments, the reporter's questions, and just looks at her and goes, I like turtles. He stays totally in zombie character because he's all made up as a zombie. Anyway, so I had to read that because I put on Facebook, folks, I'm recording my podcast and I'm reading this. We were talking before we turned the mic on that I had an observation that kind of struck me weird. I was reading The Art of Not Being Governed by
James Scott.
James C. Scott, that's right. Thank you.
I can see it and you can't.
Oh, yeah, it's on my desk. Anyway, I was reading that, and Scott mentioned in there that the ancient Vietnamese Empire that most Americans, I think, probably don't even realize. They like think Vietnam magically appeared in the 1960s or something, but there was an ancient Vietnamese empire that was very strong and very influential in the Far East. They were strong enough that the Chinese, you know, they held a huge Chinese empire at their northern border and held them check for a very long time. And he pointed out that the Vietnamese Empire used Chinese as the official court language. And he also pointed out that a number of Southeast Asian empires use Sanskrit as the official court language. And I got to thinking about it, and there are quite a few empires in history that have used an uncommon language to their subjects as a court language rather than the main language. So, for instance, the Romans used Greek.
Right.
Now, Greek was spoken in very widely in the ancient world around the Mediterranean at the time, But most of the people on the Italian peninsula spoke some version of Italian or Latin, a blending of it. It was a little different than what we know of a Latin and Italian today. Mm-hmm. But it was sort of an Italian-Latin, precursor. Yeah. But the government itself in Rome spoke Greek. Mm-hmm. And so you had this variance between what the commoners spoke and what was the official state was speaking in their activities of state. And you had the same thing with the French spoke, most of the people spoke French, but the empire itself, within the confines of the state, they spoke Latin. Mm-hmm. Prior to the Norman conquest of England, there was, a variety of languages in the British Isles, according to where you were at, Welsh and Celtic languages, and the Picts and the Scots, and at different times there was a variety. And there were Angles, and there were the Saxons that spoke a very similar version of a Germanic, mm-hmm. Anglo-Saxon. And up around York, there were Viking settlements, and there was a lot of Viking Norwegian languages being blended in with the Old English and so forth. But when the Normans arrived and set up the first true English state since the Romans had left, mm-hmm. Let me touch on that. A lot of people don't realize that prior to the Norman conquest, there really was no state in Great Britain.
Right. There was government.
There was government, and there were kings. But the kings didn't have the ability to tax. So if you don't have the ability to tax, I mean, that's like job one of the right. state. Is the ability to tax. And in order to be a state, you have to have a monopoly of violence, and you have to have the monopoly of tax. Mm-hmm. So you can't share a tax burden with another king.
Right.
If so, then you're not the exclusive state.
Right.
So prior to the Norman conquest, between the Roman conquering of Great Britain, or the Roman fall, I suppose, in Great Britain, and the Norman conquest, there was no state right. in Great Britain. There was government, but there was no state. It was a bit hectic. No, that's not the word I was looking for. What's chaotic? Because they were in the process of struggling between the invading
Norse
that had been coming, and there was an Irish invasion. Can't remember when that happened, but it was not long after the Romans fell.
This was during the feudal system, and people have a tendency to look back poorly on the feudal system, and they say, we're
those
all
poor...
scratching in the dirt and yeah. living under the feudal system. Well, the feudal system actually gave a fair amount of freedom to the peasants.
The peasants weren't taxed.
Yeah.
The peasant paid no tax in those days. It's not like, the Disney Robin Hood version. It's not like that. The peasants didn't pay tax. The nobles paid tax.
Yeah.
But the peasants didn't pay tax. But the nobles didn't pay tax until the Normans came along.
Right.
The king had no right to tax a nobility. If he wanted to make war or if he wanted to expand his kingdom, he had to do it according to his own wealth.
Yep.
Or he had to borrow the money, or he had to convince another noble to contribute. Mm-hmm. There was no compulsory tax until the Normans came along.
And he had no standing army.
No, the king only, he could have private guard, but he had to pay for him himself out
right.
of his own wealth. And that wealth came from his own land and what he could produce on his own
right.
land and what he could trade for in commerce and so forth. So, this idea that the poor, people in the feudal system were just so oppressed. Oppression has gotten worse.
Yeah.
Oppression is worse today than it was then.
The if you were to magically bring someone back from that time frame, they would be horrified
yeah.
at what we endure.
Yeah, we pay at least 50, I've argued a lot more, but we pay at least 50% of our income in
mm-hmm.
in taxes in the U.S.,
yep.
And that's just for your average person who just, the average taxpayer is paying around 50% of his income.
Yep.
But I think that's false because there's so many layers of taxes that are in place that are on every product in every direction.
That are completely unseen.
Yeah, and so I think it's much higher than 50%. But if you look at, let's say, go to a biblical situation where the Egyptians held the Israelites as what the Bible called slavery, well, that slavery was that one day in ten, they had to work for the state.
Right.
That's one tenth. And then the evil Pharaoh made it much, 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 much worse by making them work one day in seven. And then it made it, and then because of the conflict that was taking place, the basically protests, he got tough with them. And, you know, the situation got worse and worse and worse. But there, we're talking about, you know, 10% tax raising to, what is one-seventh? I don't know. I wasn't told I would need a calculator. But either way, that's what the Bible called slavery,
yeah.
You know? Now, here we are with more than 50% of our income taken, and we're like, yeah, America's a free country. I'm proud to be an American. At least I know I'm free. Yeah, no, really?
No, you really, really not, actually, at all.
now that I'm doing silly voices, that's a point that really upsets some specific people in my family, because they'll say statements like that. Well, at least I know I'm free. At least you're free. And America's the freest country in the world. Really? Have you tried opening a business in America?
Yeah.
My brother owns property in Thailand, and his wife's from Thailand. And if they want to open a business in Thailand, they open a business.
Yeah.
If they want to, let's say they... I make my own wine. I'm a winemaker, and I enjoy my wine. And if I want to share my wine, I can share my wine. I can't sell it, but I can share it. If I want to give it to somebody as a gift, I can give it to somebody as a gift. But you know what I can't do? I can't send a bottle of my wine to someone as a gift.
Yeah.
I can't send it through UPS. I can't send it through the U.S. Postal Service. I can't send it through Federal Express. I have to, from where I'm at, here in Ohio, I have to take my bottle of wine to an authorized winery who will then package it and mail it for me under their licensing, and that will cost me more than if I buy a bottle of their wine and have them ship it.
Wow.
This is in a free country.
Yeah.
Now, my brother on his property in Thailand can start to make wine and decide, you know what? I don't want to make wine. I'm going to make whiskey.
Mm-hmm.
And he can make whiskey, and he can sell it to his neighbor.
Yep.
And nobody cares. Now, which country's free?
Yep.
My ancestors, your ancestors, used to make our own spirits, our own whiskey, our own moonshine, whatever, freely done so in the mountains of Appalachia from the 1660s to the... until 1793, was that the Whiskey Rebellion? 1793, something like that?
Something like
1794,
that.
Something like that. And then the state decided that they were going to tax them.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, our ancestors didn't take it very well.
Well, we have a history of not taking things well. You say... you know, 16 whatever, at least that long.
Well, yeah, that's true. That's should we go into that theory?
There's really not a whole lot of knowledge about when exactly those people invaded, well, not invaded, homesteaded Appalachia.
Yeah.
Because they actually lived quite peaceably.
Mm-hmm.
They, you know, people say... you know, all the Native Americans didn't have property rights.
Hmm.
They did, actually.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
And the settlers, the early settlers into Appalachia, understood those property rights,
mm-hmm.
and traded and bartered and
right.
had property, and was done entirely peacefully.
Yeah. There were conflicts. That, you know, there were always conflicts.
There were always conflicts. But,
this idea that the Indians, like, oh, well, they didn't understand that you could own the land. Yeah, they did. They knew that.
Which is why they had distinct, you know, this is our hunting ground,
yeah.
They
had agreements among themselves where they could go and where they could farm and where they could hunt, you know, and for example, there are Buffalo Traces that run crisscross all over Kentucky. that the Indians would use as footpaths to move goods back and forth from tribe to tribe and mm-hmm. so forth. And as in Scioto County, Ohio, there's a big natural salt lick there. And there are pottery samples, and there's a lot of archaeology to show that the Indians were using that from very ancient times. And there are buffalo traces that were actually the Indian roads, and the state didn't make those roads, by the way. But they were Indian roads that we now call buffalo traces, but really they were Indian roads that took from that salt lick. You can actually look on Google Earth and you can see the traces going out, the roads going out from that in different directions towards the major Indian settlements. Mm-hmm. One of which cuts from, there was a river crossing at modern day Portsmouth, Ohio, that was, you could literally walk across the Ohio River most of the year.
Right.
And so there was a crossing there. And then you can follow that in Google Earth. You can see the trace of that trace. you can see that road that cuts all the way, almost a straight line from that crossing at Portsmouth to Frankfort, Kentucky. Mm-hmm. And then it locks up with another trace that's there that comes off of another salt lick that's up just across the river from Cincinnati in northern Kentucky. And so these roads crisscross in there. Now, where was I going with that? Oh, property rights. and when these Indians were in transit, then it was perfectly acceptable to cross for a Shawnee to cross through Cherokee mm-hmm. territory as long as he was in transit
right.
carrying goods and so forth.
And
there was
respectful.
A respect. Yeah. There's a book written by William Henry Harrison called... The Aboriginal Native, I believe it was called The Aboriginal Natives of the Ohio Valley or something like that. It was written by Henry Harrison, William Henry Harrison, prior to him becoming president. Mm-hmm. And he explores all these things and talks about it. He was actually a pretty smart guy. If I recall, he's the one that died of pneumonia. Was he the one that died of pneumonia like months into his presidency? Am I thinking of the right guy?
I'm not sure.
Yeah. First president to die in office. Oldest president elected until Ronald Reagan was elected. Tippecanoe and Tyler, too. William Henry Harrison was actually the first... I Googled it real quick. We paused the recording and I Googled it real quick because we can do that.
This is why we don't record live.
Anyway...
Well, no, I guess technically we do record live.
And then we cut it.
We just don't broadcast live.
There you go. We're not zombies. Really? Ignore the pictures on Facebook.
Only occasional zombies.
Part-time. William Henry Harrison was the first president to die in office. And he was, until Ronald Reagan was elected, he was the oldest president to ever serve as president. Anyway, but he wrote this book, and he died in office because evidently he enjoyed making speeches. So during a horrible blizzard, they had his inaugural ceremony, mm-hmm. and so he comes out, and it's all outdoors, and he comes out and starts giving his speech, and I can't remember now, I would have to look it up, and I'm not going to, but even though I'm on Wiki's page right now for William Henry Harrison. But he gave like a 2 or 3 hour speech, something like that. Just a crazy long speech in the middle of this raging blizzard. And then died of pneumonia. So.
Serves him right.
Yeah. So he was one of the best presidents we ever had because he actually died.
Before he could do
anything
bad.
Before he did anything. He never signed any bills. He never signed any legislation. He never did anything. So he was one of our greatest presidents. He should be on all the money. They should chip off all those faces off of Mount Rushmore and put his face up there. Our greatest president, William Henry Harrison. And the wonderful slogan that he had, Tippecanoe and Tyler too. I'm pretty sure about that part. Let me double check. I think military career. Yeah, Battle of Fallen Timbers. Yeah. Okay. He was instrumental in the battle that Tecumseh died in. Okay.
to the book.
Yeah. So his book, and it doesn't even list it as far as I see on Wikipedia. Let's see. Because it's out of print. It's really hard to get your hands on. If you see it in a garage sale or something, grab it. And
send it to badquaker.com.
Looking through Wikipedia, and I see no mention at all of his book, which is really sad. Because it was really important to have a book written by somebody who was there observing them. You know, he knew a lot about the Native Americans in the Ohio Valley. He faced Tecumseh. He, you know, negotiated with Tecumseh. Tecumseh died in a battle that he was involved in. So this is a guy who knew intimately the structure of the Native American government. Mm-hmm. Jefferson made a very uninformed statement that he said, I'm horribly paraphrasing Jefferson, but he said, I don't understand how the Indians do it. He says they trade, they negotiate treaties and settlements, they among themselves, he's talking about, not with mm-hmm. the U.S. government. He's talking about how the tribes worked among themselves. He says they do all these things peacefully without a government. And what Jefferson didn't understand was, no, they had a government.
Right.
They just didn't have a state.
Right.
And this simple
and
variation.
These things happen peacefully unless you introduce a state.
Exactly.
And that's the kind of the core of anarchy, is not that that you can manage the violent aspects of humanity better on an individual basis. It's that those things have a tendency to go away mm-hmm. when you don't have this influence of the state.
Yeah. Because really, all the state is the biggest, giantest thug of a bully mm-hmm. that's around. Mm-hmm. And so if you decide for yourself, hey, it'd be really great if my life was managed by a bully.
Right.
You know, well, nobody would do that. That's right. Crazy. And yet that's what we do with a state. But you know, if you read Henry Harris, if you can get hold of this book, if it's in a library or somewhere,
it might be. Have you checked Google Documents?
I haven't in about a year or so. I was looking for it about a year ago, but I couldn't even find.
Or the Project Gutenberg.
It might be. Yeah.
They have a lot of that old timey stuff.
I would love to find out if anyone owns the rights to it, and you know, get it reprinted, and
right.
then I would have the rights. No. I would do it in the commons. But anyway, my point being that William Henry Harrison was there and saw it firsthand. Jefferson didn't actually go past the Appalachians and go wander around among the Native Americans.
Right.
So he's seeing things, as they say, through a glass darkly.
Right.
Whereas William Henry Harrison walked around and talked to them, and he saw that they did have government and they did have organization. They just didn't have a state, you know. This is what we've said before. Well, you make a treaty. Here you are on the Ohio River, and you walk up and you say, we'd like to talk to your chief. Well, there's no... that's an English word.
Right.
There's no Shawnee word for chief. There's no Algonquin word for chief. There's no, you know, that doesn't make any sense. Well, who are you talking about? Who do you want to talk to? Well, the guy who makes the decisions. Your big shot. Your, you know.
Right.
Your strong man. Well, they didn't have a strong man.
Right.
They had an elder, you know, or there would be three or four elders. And this is for, just for this one group here
or
that lives on this.
The guy who's a, you know, really good warrior.
Yeah, which could be a totally different person from their wise leader of the village.
Right.
And could be a different person from their medicine man, which could be a different person. You know, we think of Tecumseh. I mentioned him a second ago. Tecumseh was a great war chief. That's the title we put on him.
Right.
He didn't call himself that, but that's what we call him. Well, as a warrior, he had no rights in government.
Right.
He could only do what he could do if people would voluntarily follow him.
Right.
He didn't have the draft.
No, he had, you know, an understanding of the way battles worked.
Yeah.
And he had the personality to inspire people to follow him.
Right.
But there was no force involved.
Right. It was purely voluntary. As a matter of fact, he united through his, the dynamics of his personality, he united a whole variety of different Indian nations that didn't have any association with each other.
Right.
That were literally 1,000 miles apart in order to bring a wider battlefield, you know, against the encroaching Europeans.
Right.
But, so, my point being, of course, that government existed among these people, but the state did not.
Yes.
So, someone would come and say, you know, we want to make a treaty with you. Well, unfortunately, you're talking apples and oranges.
Mm-hmm.
Because without a state, there was nobody to force. You're just making a private contract with one guy or two
right.
guys or five guys. So, you're not doing anything that the whole rest of all the Shawnees are going to acknowledge, or
right.
the whole rest of the Iroquois are going to acknowledge. You've just made an agreement with four or five guys, and what rights do they have to tell me what to do all the way up here in Michigan?
Right.
You know? So the Europeans, and then the people from the United States, as they formed, they would make these arrangements to try to control land that the individual they made the arrangement with had no control over.
Right.
He only had control over the land that was right there immediate to him, you know. So the Europeans were confused on the point, and they would think, well, the Indians have backed off. They've changed their mind, or they failed to follow through with their word. No, they didn't.
Right.
You didn't make the agreement with all of them, because they are not them. They
right.
are individual people. The Quakers in Pennsylvania understood this. And so the Quakers in Pennsylvania were able to acknowledge property rights and buy and sell land with Indians.
Yeah.
This concept that Indians didn't understand property rights is an invented thing by liberals in the 20th century.
Yep.
The famous thing with the chief, the speech from the chief, what's the city, not Portland, up in the Northwest...
Seattle.
That there was this chief named Seattle. Do you know about this legend?
Where
this
he,
lie?
Kind of.
He supposedly, this chief Seattle made this long, heartwarming speech, which sounds suspiciously leftist. Anyway, the problem is the Indian in question was never at the location where the speech was supposed to be given. Didn't have any knowledge of the events that were in the speech, didn't speak English. The person who supposedly heard the speech didn't speak the language that Seattle spoke. He had to get it through an other translator. There's so many levels of falseness to this story. And then when it all turns out, the entire thing is a fabrication of a reporter who was not trying to deceive anybody. He was just writing a fictional account
right.
of out of his own mind. He was making up a thing, you know, as an entertaining, like a historical fiction.
Like the history of the bathtub?
Yeah. And once it hit the newspapers as truth, it went wild up and down the West Coast, because they're a bunch of liberal idiots anyway.
Right.
Not everybody on the West Coast.
And you know, that's... Unfortunately, we live in a society where we trust that these figures are going to give us truth. And so when they say something, we go, oh, that mm-hmm. must be correct.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not a history buff. I know a little history.
Mm-hmm.
But... It's actually my friend and I, it's one of our favorite things to do is to watch the History Channel and go, false, that's not true, you're making that up, that's from this show.
Uh-huh. What did I see last night, or night before last, maybe? Oh, my. Oh, sorry I brought it up. I thought I had it. I think it was on one of those Food Network things where they spit out some kind of fallacy. Oh, I know what... Yeah, it was. They were talking about pizza, and the guy said pizza was invented in New York.
What? What?
Yeah. I'm thinking maybe people have been taking sauce and putting it on bread for the cheese for a really long time.
Yeah, even the acceptable pizza was invented in is Naples.
Yeah, that's the basic story.
Yeah, and the pizza margarita, and they named it after the queen.
Yeah,
and...
but, you know, technically, people have been taking a piece of bread and putting some sauce and cheese on it for a really long time.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you take a gyro.
Mm-hmm.
Gyro is not much different than a pizza. It's just
yeah.
folded.
Where were we? William Henry Harrison, property rights Indian.
I think
lack of government.
We were dancing around the conspiracy theory of the Appalachians.
Oh, yeah. On the origin of certain people in Appalachia.
Yeah.
Is that what we're talking about?
Yeah.
We should clarify
which
that.
Which we got distracted talking about Native American property rights.
We only have about 5 minutes left, so is it really fair? We kind of have to bring it up now.
Kind of.
There are more than one origins to the people of Appalachia. When we're talking about the people of Appalachia, we're talking about pre-1776 Appalachians.
Right.
Pre-forming of the United States.
Non-Native American.
Non-Native American, European-based, well, possibly Asian.
Non-Native American.
Non-Native American, Appalachian. There were waves and waves of what were called Ulster Scots, which were Scottish people who had been displaced in Scotland because of their religion. They'd been forcibly moved to Ireland. And then they were basically escaping the mess that was happening in Northern Ireland in those days, mm-hmm. you know, not even to enter what's happened in Northern Ireland since. But and then there were a lot of Scots who didn't actually get shoved over to Ireland, who were taken right out of the Irish-Scotland border and were able to escape to the New World. Mm-hmm. And so all these Scots and Irish and Scot-Irish came to the New World. This was in between 1660 and about late 1700s. There were waves of them that were coming over. And they were not accepted at all in the port cities and in the normal colonies of the 13 colonies. Mm-hmm. They were frowned upon.
But Appalachia is pretty much identical to their home.
Yeah, where they were used to living in the borderlands of Scotland and between Scotland and England. So they were able to just move right into Appalachia and live entirely independent in Appalachia while the colonies were doing their own thing. Mm-hmm. They were there without the permission of the king. They were not under a all the colonies were under charters, mm-hmm. which were corporations authorized by the crown. They were not there under a charter. They just moved in. Some of them had conflicts with the Indians. Some of them made contracts with the Indians. And some of them intermarried with the Indians. Mm-hmm. But here's the key to what we were talking about and what we were hinting to. There were already non-Indian people in Appalachia when the Scot-Irish got there. Mm-hmm. These people, there's some dispute. Most of them are in eastern Tennessee and bleeding up into eastern Kentucky. Some of them might have reached as far as modern-day West Virginia, and some of them have come down a little southern into the southern Appalachians as well. But most of them were in that eastern Tennessee, eastern Kentucky area. And these were people of a relatively dark hair, dark skin, olive complexion, like a Mediterranean type look to them. Very gypsy in appearance and in traditions. And many of them had names of Spanish origin, especially first names. Most of them didn't have a last name.
Right.
They had first names of Spanish origin. And you'll see this in Appalachia today. You'll have names like Juanita. In the middle of Appalachia. And now, here's the odd part. You can find a name like that on a headstone from, like, 1815.
Right. And it's a little bit difficult today because Appalachia has kind of been opened up. The state went in the 60s and 70s and really
destroyed the Appalachian culture.
Appalachia.
Yeah.
And
helping
and,
them.
Yeah.
Thank
and
you,
was
new.
Forcing outside influence into Appalachia.
Mm-hmm.
And
new
so,
society.
Yeah, and so it's hard now because you go into Appalachia and you see people with Corvettes and mullets drinking Mountain Dew, you know, and you think, oh, but Appalachian culture was radically different from that.
Yeah. Yeah, prior to the invasion of the state into Appalachia, it was very much its own unique culture. And, you know, the East Coast media loved to stereotype the Appalachians because they were close to the East Coast, mm-hmm. and they could do so. So you had things like the playing up of the whole, what was the famous feud?
Oh, the Hatfields and the McCoys.
Yeah, the Hatfields and McCoys feud. The problem is, that was really a state confrontation because you had, like, some that were, I can't remember the details now, but one was a sheriff and there was, like, a judge involved and stuff like this. But if you go back into the history of Appalachia, it's not that there were no feuds. It's that you're lied about as to what a feud is.
Right.
My family was involved in a very long-running feud with the ooh, their name escapes me, and that's probably good.
Large.
With the Large family. My family was involved in a feud for several generations with the Large family. But there was very few deaths involved. I only know of one death in the whole time that there was a feud. But so a feud doesn't necessarily, it's not hillbillies with straw hats and guns shooting at each other.
Right.
A feud is different from that, you know. And we don't have time to go any further into it. But my point on the other thing is that there was this group of people who blended in and who blended with the Scotch-Irish that were not Scotch-Irish, that were preceded the Scotch-Irish.
Very specific genetic markers.
Yeah.
That make them stand out from anyone who ought to have been in that area at that time frame.
Yeah, specifically the olive complexion, darker mm-hmm. eyes, brown eyes. You don't see a lot of Scotch-Irish with brown eyes, but you see a lot of people in Appalachia with brown eyes. Darker hair and a very unusual shape right on the very, where the neck, the spinal part of the neck attaches to the back of the skull, mm-hmm. there's a sort of a protrusion that's indicative of that genetic line mm-hmm. that matches.
And the teeth shape and the eye shape.
Yeah. And once you see and once you understand this look, you can spot it. You know, we're up here now in Western Ohio, and occasionally I'll see somebody at a grocery store and I'll go, Appalachian.
Yeah.
Because you just know it. You can see it in them. And this is coming from those people who were there before the Scotch-Irish arrived.
And it's a recessive, it pops up. Qualities.
Yeah.
So it's easily bred out mm-hmm. of the line, and yet it also pops up in weird places
right.
that you don't expect.
Which gets confusing sometimes, you know, 100 years ago for families in Appalachia when a whole family of redheads and blondes and all of a sudden a dark hair
right.
pops up. And so sometimes that was confusing and there were accusations, but there was a genetic reason for it. Well, that's not the direction we had intended to go.
No. And that's a discussion that is long and winding and not fully, there are very few facts involved because, you know, a lot of people don't really want to go study Appalachia.
Yeah, and unfortunately, the Appalachian people themselves, there's been a certain stigmatism that's almost caused them to, you know, want to not be associated with their heritage. It's horribly unfortunate because I think we could learn a tremendous amount.
Yeah. And it's, you know, it's a vibrant culture of people who are fiercely independent.
Uh-huh.
And it literally took until the 1960s and 70s before they were conquered by the American state.
Yeah. And that's what you have to put it that way, too, because they were conquered. They were divided. Their culture was smashed.
Yeah. And they held out longer than anybody else.
Pretty much. Well, there's Seminoles in southern Florida that held out pretty good.
Yeah.
But, you know, and there's some Indian tribes that escaped into Canada.
But, yeah.
Well, folks, thanks for listening. Send us your feedback. I'm Ben at badquaker.com.
I'm Kai, K-I, at badquaker.com.
And be sure and check back with us next Wednesday for another podcast. Like we said, there may be nothing on the website for Thursday and Friday. We don't know how that's going to go.
Same bad Quaker time, same bad Quaker channel.
Thanks a lot, folks.
Anonymous.
Anonymous. You're trying to get us hacked.